Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Joining me on this episode is Will Miles from ReadAndReaction.com and on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. We'll get into our conversation that I've teased with Gators quarterback commit, Carlos Del Rio. But first and foremost, we're recording on a Tuesday night. We'll splice the interview, all that stuff together. But you had a little bit of a draft on Monday night.
Yeah, I got roped into into being the head coach for my son's little league team. So last night I was picking other 8-year-olds to be on his team, and it's funny, once you get down to like the fifth or sixth pick, you're just trying to figure out, all right, which dad's going to actually help me out. That's really the criteria. It doesn't matter how good the player is; it matters how much his dad's going to help out. So it was a good time. I'm happy to be doing it this year. It'll be fun. I love coaching and hanging out with him and doing that sort of stuff. But, a little bit, one more responsibility for the spring that'll have to go away when the fall comes back.
Yeah, it was, we were planning on doing the Carlos Del Rio interview together if we could, but I took care of that on Monday night. We'll piece it all together here with Will and I, and then, get the reaction from Carlos Del Rio, conversation I had with him, and then after that, Will and I will give our thoughts on a couple of recruiting experts, Barton Simmons from 24/7 and Tom Luganville of ESPN, tabbing this most recent 2020 recruiting class as impactful in helping Florida make a 2020 college football playoff run. It was weird, Will, those guys released kind of the same thoughts, same article on the same day. They're kind of looking at what a recruiting class could mean for the Gators, or not just the Gators, but overall. But we would, of course, just share their thoughts on what they said about the Gators. But Will, it was kind of a look back at last weekend, or kind of the last couple of days with you. I'm excited, man. I got the I got a first daddy daughter dance coming up this weekend.
Well, life happens in the off season. You're not allowed to do that stuff once August comes around. So it's, man, that's great, right? I mean, I did that stuff with my little girl when she was younger. Now she's 11. She still kind of likes me, but in a couple of years she's gonna hate me. So we're getting to that point in the curve of her being at home, and enjoy it while you can, man, because it goes really fast.
Yeah, she's already getting the dance routine down. So we'll see how successful I am Saturday night. There will be an update next week.
Well, Kaylee did post some video of you dancing, either, I don't know whether it was on Facebook or on Twitter, but your wife threw you pretty good there, buddy. You ought to post that so other people can see it.
The Twitter world's not supposed to see that. We'll see if it eventually makes the rounds on Twitter. But yeah, last week, I guess it was the anniversary of the Harlem Shake, that fad that went around, six years ago or whatever. But I guess memories on Facebook pop up, and I had friends and Kaylee, my wife, share all that stuff. So yeah, it's a lot of people who didn't know me back then got to see the funny little joke that was the Harlem Shake back in the day.
Well, this is one of the worries of doing a live show is that the internet never forgets. So I'm sure it's going to pop up somewhere, Dave, and I'm sure that Chris Zinn will have some fun with it too.
Yeah, everybody's running to Facebook right now. So all right, we'll get into the episode here. But before we do, remember you can find Gators Breakdown at news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the past Gators Breakdown episodes there, as well as News4Jax coverage of the Gators. If you missed previous episodes, catch them out there or on all the podcast platforms out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff out there, Stitcher as well. Also, follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. And a reminder, coming up, come see me for a speaking engagement for the Fighting Gators Touchdown Club in Gainesville on April 23rd, the week after the Gators spring game. Be plenty to discuss. The rest of the schedule coming up this spring consists of Gator basketball writer Chris Harry on February 27th, so a couple more days before that. March 26th will be Coach Savage and head coach Dan Mullen on May 28th. So without further ado, let's get this episode started with a short conversation with Gators quarterback commit Carlos Del Rio. And we're joined now by Carlos Del Rio, four-star quarterback commit for the Gators from Loganville, Georgia, and Grayson High School. Carlos, thanks for hopping on Gators Breakdown.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's go back a little bit. And it was last July, Friday Night Lights camp. In Gainesville, taking part in the camp and commit to the Gators that weekend. So what made you commit to Florida, and then what does that commitment mean to you today?
I committed to Florida because of the connection that I had with the coaches. Also, I got family down in Florida. Every time I took a visit to Florida, it was just a good community. I liked areas around Florida, and I also liked the school, the education, the players, the coaches, and how the players and coaches had a connection with each other. And the commitment means to me that, like, basically I'm all in for the Gators. Like, once I get there, I'm ready to work.
What was it about Dan Mullen? Was it his history with quarterbacks? Is it what he proved at Florida in year one? What was it about Dan Mullen that sold you and committing to him?
During the camp, Dan Mullen, he came up to the quarterbacks a lot to help out on his own instead of just letting the quarterback coach do it by himself. He actually got hands-on during the camp, showing that he actually knows progressions. He actually knows footworks and mechanics. And that was a big thing to me to make me commit.
I think one big thing that has Gator fans excited for you, and we've seen it, you know, the last month or so, but that's kind of when it's been ramped up. But you've been doing it the whole time since you've been committed to Florida. But the Gator Nation is kind of happy to see you out there helping recruit your future teammates. So what goes behind that? How are the conversations like?
Just seeing them at camps or seeing them at schools or in person. Like, I just get to know them at first. Then during the camp, I'll see what type of player they are, if they're emotional, if they're passionate about the game, see if they're aggressive with the game. And once I see it, if I feel like they can contribute to the team, then, you know, I just walk up to them, ask them if they got any offers, if Florida's been looking at them. If they tell me that Florida's been looking at them, I just ask them, like, what you waiting on? Like, why you ain't commit yet? Then they'll tell me, like, they haven't really been down there, or they just feel like the coach is not messing with them as much as they messing with the school. And I tell them, like, trust me, they messing with you. Because with me, I felt the same way, but every time I go up there, it's just a personal connection. So I tell them, you just got to go up there, keep going. Every time you go up, the coaches will look at you not only as a football player, but as a child of their own. And with that connection with the coaches and the player, I feel like you need to come. And after that conversation, they'll think up on it, you know, go home, probably watch some highlights of Florida, look up some stats or whatever, and then they'll text me on Instagram, Twitter, my phone. They'd be like, they think they want to commit, or they think they want to take a visit. And once they take the visit, that's when they'll commit.
How was it watching Florida this past season? I don't know how much you watched of Florida before Dan Mullen or in Dan Mullen's first season, but you committed before his second season as head coach. So, like, how much did you pay attention to what was, you know, Florida was doing on the field? And, you know, how did it feel watching the Gators as an actual commit?
It was a great experience watching Coach Mullen coming there as his second season and just changing the program, you know, just watching it progress and advance. And watching the games as a commit makes me feel like it feels great when you see your team just going up, winning games. Or even if they lose with 100% effort. They lose with everybody behind them, you know, having their back. Or they'll lose not even by that much. It'll just be they got outplayed one play. But the whole game, they give 100% effort. And they're always a team. Like, they never turning on each other. They always together. And that's something that's big for me, watching the Gators.
Let's get personal with you. Everything you have coming up, you let me know when I reached out to you last week. You got the Elite 11 coming up. So what are you looking forward to that event?
I'm looking forward to going to that camp, showing out, showing them what Florida Gators have coming. Looking forward to going there and winning it all and just showcasing my skills and having everybody want to watch the Gators, having everybody expecting me to come in and, you know, give it my best and give the Gators a national championship.
All right, and kind of different heading to your senior season coming up this year and transferring schools. What went behind that decision to transfer to Grayson?
Just connections that I had with the school. My dad, you know, he got a job over in Grayson also. So just talking to other coaches at the school, they really wanted me and felt like I had a better opportunity at the school. So, you know, I just made a business decision.
Would there be like a different, will you be playing in a different system, similar offense that you were playing in before? What's it going to look like coming up for your senior season?
It's a similar offense, just a little bit more using my arm talent this year, you know, more passing, less running, just showcasing every aspect of my skills.
And talking about those skills, what do you want to see yourself improve your senior season?
Probably just staying in the pocket. Not even staying in the pocket, you know, like pocket movement, keeping my eyes downfield, catching receivers in small holes and making that throw in small windows instead of just going through the progression, not seeing there, and then just getting yards that I could get. I'd rather just go through the progression, see if not there, and then look backside or look for a check down and then get yards from my receivers, get my receivers some yards, some stats, get my running back some yards and some stats.
Was there anything in particular when you watched Florida last year and, of course, Felipe Franks at the beginning of the year and then Kyle Trask takes over, anything that you noticed from those two guys that you want to incorporate in your game or knowing that you're going to see when you're the quarterback in Florida?
Probably the leadership that they had, taking control of the team, taking control of the offense, taking control of the play, just keeping their composure during the play. Under pressure, they just stay calm and collected in the pocket and just make throws before taking a big hit, you know, getting right up and having a smile on their face as they completed the throw after a big hit.
It's good to know you a little bit, Carlos. What's your hobbies outside of football? Were you video games, any other sports? What's the life of Carlos Del Rio like?
Hobbies outside of football. I used to like riding horses, but
really
outside of, yes, sir.
Yep.
So I do that occasionally. I just like to have fun, you know, have fun days where if I have an off day, I just go to the mall.
Yeah, Carlos, to get to know you a bit more, what's your favorite subjects in school?
Probably math.
What is it about math that piques your interest?
Sometimes it's just easy to me. Like, something about me, like math, like the hard stuff is easy, but the easy stuff is hard to me. And hard, like math, is mostly hard stuff, so it'll come easy to me sometimes.
I hear you. All right, Carlos, man, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on Gators Breakdown. If there's a message out there to Gator Nation that you can share, do you have one?
Most definitely. I just want to thank the Gator Nation for, you know, supporting me 100%, wanting me to be a Gator. I just want to let all the Gator fans know that once I get there, we will be getting a national championship, and I will be giving 100% each season, each practice, and every workout.
All right. That's Carlos Del Rio, 2021 commit for the Gators. Thanks, Carlos.
Thank you.
Well, man, good conversation there with Carlos Del Rio. Short conversation, but, well, you can tell Del Rio embraces being a Gator commit, and it's always beneficial to get that quarterback early in a class to help recruit. We know the importance of that position on the field, and I think that translates to recruiting other players as well.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, it's really the first time Mullins had a quarterback in the fold this early in the process. I mean, you had Emory Jones his first year, but obviously that's the transition class. And then you had Jalen Jones, who was reasonably early, but wasn't as early as this. And then last year, Anthony Richardson decommitted at one point and then recommitted. And you had sort of the Carson Beck stuff going on with him and, you know, deciding between Florida and Georgia. So yeah, you got Del Rio coming in now. And I think it's interesting. I was looking back at his overall ranking. He's ranked 200th overall by 24/7 composite. And that's right around where Anthony Richardson went. He was 201 at the end of this cycle. But if you look back at where he was back in August of 2018, he was 421st. So the quarterbacks tend to swing around quite a bit. So I don't know that I'd put a whole lot of stock in the overall ranking. That's probably going to change quite a bit, but certainly having the quarterback in the fold, having a guy with a big arm back there is a big deal for Mullen, because that's really the goal, is one quarterback recruit every cycle, keep that sort of line going. And then when you do have attrition like Jalen Jones leaving, or if you have a guy who's not happy who decides to transfer, you've got plenty of people in the fold to pick up the slack.
And well, also, if you look at the history of recruiting the quarterback position since Mullen's been at Florida, you could probably say the true dual threat in Emory Jones, Jalen Jones, Anthony Richardson there. But this one, you know, maybe more of a pro style. And he mentioned in the conversation of wanting to be able to, this coming up senior season, stay in the pocket some more, use his arm talent some more. That's part of the reason he transfers to another school. This is, you know, I won't necessarily, you know, pro style dual threat. That's kind of labels now that almost are kind of outdated. You're starting to see a lot more in the NFL of quarterbacks that need to be able to move, at least move in the pocket a good bit, make something happen if a play breaks down. But what we know, if for the sake of college football, dual threat, you know, in a quarterback that can make something happen with his legs, a run package, design, an offense designed around the quarterback's legs to make, you know, pick up short yardage plays, third and goal, third and short, fourth and goal, fourth and short. Not so sure Carlos Del Rio is in that label there. Probably more of a, you know, for lack of a better term, pro style, sit in a pocket quarterback that can throw and only really needs to run when he has to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the debate this offseason between Trask and Emory Jones has been sort of based in the fact that Emory Jones is perceived as a better fit for Mullen's offense. But I think one of the hallmarks of Mullen's offense is he's able to take advantage of guys with complex and different skill sets so long as they're able to do certain things in his offense well. And you know, 24/7, it's interesting. They have the skills for Del Rio listed at delivery, arm strength, and size at 8. Intangibles, pocket presence at 7, and then outside the pocket, mobility and accuracy at 6. And you really, I mean, I guess it sort of depends on when you look. If you look 2 years ago as a sophomore, he was only completing about 59% of his passes. This year, he completed 64% as a senior, but he only had 13.3 yards per completion, which does indicate that he was dumping it off quite a bit. So that sort of goes to what he was talking about in terms of being able to stay in the pocket a little bit longer, go downfield, use his big arm. You know, the other thing is that Tim Tebow, though he was a dual threat and though he was a really effective runner, was not somebody who was running a 4.440.
Right.
He had a different style of running, but that style worked within what Dan Mullen wanted him to do. And I think for people who didn't necessarily know a whole lot about Tebow when he burst onto the scene in 2006, the size that he ran with, essentially being a fullback in that offense, was a surprise to people. And so I think Mullen gets creative. He finds ways to use guys in way and puts them in situations to succeed. And I suspect he's going to do that with Del Rio as well. But I think it's a misnomer to say that someone is a perfect fit for Mullen's offense. I think what he really wants to make sure of is that he's putting the defense in a situation where the defense is at a disadvantage. And whether you do that with RPOs or whether you do that with read options or whether you do that with a quarterback who reads the defense and can really stretch it and also maybe use running backs to get out into the flats. Mullen's going to find a way to do that regardless of who he's got as the personnel. He just needs somebody who can execute his offense, get the ball in the right place, and the program will be successful.
All right. So, yeah, special thanks to Carlos Del Rio for jumping here on Gators Breakdown for this short conversation. I'm really glad we could get him on here. Really looking forward to him putting the finishing touches on this class from a player's perspective and helping get all these recruits in. You can see him out there, follow him on Twitter. There's even a competition between him and other players out there, it seems like, who can recruit the better players for the 2021 class. So something to watch out there with Gators quarterback commit Carlos Del Rio. So, well, something caught my eye. It was late last week, and I sent this to you. Figured it'd be a pretty good conversation piece here. Just like I said earlier in the episode, kind of surprised that two articles with almost the kind of same style of topic and looking back at the 2020 class and how impactful they can be, even early impacts as well. So ESPN and 24/7 released articles. We'll start with ESPN first and Tom Luginbill. And the article was titled, "Who Improved Their 2020 College Football Playoff Chances Through Recruiting?" So the articles went on to say, college football's 2020 recruiting classes have been signed with more and more prospects enrolling early in school. That translates to more first-year players, providing an immediate impact, which in turn gives teams the opportunity to ascend up the rankings ahead of schedule. How will this recruiting cycle affect the 2020 college football playoff? For a handful of teams that didn't reach the playoff last season, the 2020 additions could translate in a major way. So here's what they had to say, and Tom Luginbill had to say about Florida. 21 wins in two seasons, the return of a number of key players next season, including quarterback Kyle Trask, and two straight top 10 recruiting classes have Dan Mullen and Florida positioned to make a playoff push. The position hit the most by graduations and departures as wide receiver. The Gators signed two ESPN 300 wideouts who are expected to make an instant impact. Xavier Henderson, the younger brother of former Gators corner CJ Henderson, brings a 6'3" size and elite athletic ability for his size. And 6'4" Jaquavion Frazier is a physical presence who plays through contact and wins in traffic. Two early enrollees on the offensive line who could factor in quickly are tackle Isaiah Walker and guard Joshua Braun. Florida hauled in an impressive class of defensive linemen led by instant impact Jervon Dexter, Antoine Powell, Princely Umanilan. I think I got it right that time, Will. And Johnny Brown could provide valuable snaps. Powell is already on campus and is the best edge rusher of the group. While there is a lot of talent in the secondary in Gainesville, ESPN 300 Jahiri Rogers is already on campus and is elite when changing direction and breaking on the ball. And we'll go ahead and go to the 24/7 part of this as well. Barton Simmons and also an article titled "Projecting College Football's Most Impactful Signing Classes." He says, coaches like to remind us every year their signing day press conferences that judgment shouldn't be passed on those signing classes until 3 or 4 years down the road. That may be true, but we are also living in an era of instant impact, an era that has seen true freshmen regularly contribute in the biggest moments of college football's biggest games. He says, we've already passed judgment on the class of 2020 in our 24/7 sports composite team rankings. But forget the 3 or 4 year analysis. This list is about which classes are poised to make the biggest and quickest impact. So he says, though transfers do not funnel into the recruiting rankings, they are weighed here. But, you know, he didn't factor that into Florida as we don't know the eligibility of those guys. But Barton goes on to say about Florida, Will, of the nearly 3,000 yards of receiving yards that Florida's wide receivers accounted for last fall, 65% of it's gone. So that's why he says landing top 100 receiver Xavier Henderson so important. And Florida also recruited well at the line of scrimmage, and five-star Jervon Dexter is just too talented not to make a significant impact on the defensive front. Even as summer enrollees, four stars Johnny Brown, Princely Umanilan, Jalen Lee are all threats to impact as well. On the offensive line, keep an eye on Joshua Braun, Isaiah Walker in spring practice. Are they as upgrades in terms of talent and what Florida has been able or working with up front? Speaking of upgrades, Derek Wingo's athleticism should get him on the field at linebacker despite his arrival coming in the summer. So, Will, we've discussed this class at length, of course, but both of these articles come out the same day and pretty much have the same thoughts. They pick up on what we found as important, that's important as well. Not that the Gators got really good prospects, but they got those prospects in the area of need and difference-making areas, mainly in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, I think both articles mention wide receiver, but that's not really the area that I'm the most concerned about. I mean, the area I'm really concerned about is the defense, because you figure that the when you look at the Jim McElwain era, you know, the offense was putrid all 3 years, but the reason that the team went 4-7 in 2017 was because the defense took a significant step back. And obviously Mullen's been able to do a really good job with the offense and make it sort of a top 25, top 30 offense, but hasn't really taken that step up to make it a top 10 offense. At the same time, the defense has sort of been in the 25 to 35 range, depending upon which stat you're actually using, but you're losing a lot of experience when you talk about Grenard, you talk about Jabari Zuniga, you talk about Adam Schuler, David Reese, CJ Henderson. It's a lot of guys to replace, particularly up front. And that's where the guys like Gervon Dexter, Lamar Goods, Antoine Powell, those sorts of guys, and Brenton Cox are going to be the guys who have to step up and fill those roles. And if you were to ask me which unit is going to take a step back or which unit isn't going to improve as much in 2020 over 2019, I'd say it's probably the defense. I think the offense is going to continue to hum, continue to get better with Trask at quarterback. You figure the offensive line is going to be better regardless, because I'm not sure it can be much worse. And then, which means the running game is going to pick up. If the running game picks up, the offense is going to be better. On the defensive side of the ball, you've lost an awful lot of talent there, and you got to replace it up front. Now, certainly guys like TJ Slayton and Zach Carter and some of those guys started to step up towards the end of the year, and that's maybe where you expect to see maybe the next step taken forward. But as far as this class is concerned, I'm much more I think Florida needs to get more from this class on the defensive side of the ball, particularly up front, than maybe on the offensive side of the ball at wide receiver or even offensive line.
Yeah, and I like that Tom Luganville brought up Jahari Rogers as a potential contributor for a college football playoff push, because while Florida has had these top-notch two cornerbacks the last couple of years in Marco Wilson and C.J. Henderson, they've had to deal with some injuries. They've had issues where players had to play in other positions or out of position. And Rogers, just the way Luganville describes him, could come in and provide stability to the unit as true freshmen or as a true freshman, much like Kyrie Elam did last season. Now, I don't think he'll – and I think this goes a lot for these guys on defense – they don't have to be a contributor if everything goes right, but how often does that really happen? You're going to have to deal with injuries. You're going to have to deal with stuff like that, adversity throughout the season. So if everything goes right injury-wise in the defensive backfield, Rogers, you can kind of work him in, and that's kind of the way I see these guys in the trenches too. You can work him in. You don't have to force him out there, because I think that's where you get in trouble sometimes with true freshmen. These guys can be impacts, but I don't think you want to have to force them out there before they're ready. And we know Mullen's a big proponent of that, especially at the quarterback position and on offense. But you got to think so, especially too in the trenches in the SEC. You don't want these true freshmen. You don't want to have to rely on Gervon Dexter or Goods or Human Mila, no matter if they're a five-star prospect or a highly rated four-star prospect. You don't want to have to come in relying on those guys, especially what you have coming back in TJ Slayton and hopefully the return of Elijah Conliffe as well. And as you mentioned, Carter and Moon coming back. You hope those guys are guys that lead the way and lead the charge, and these guys are more supportive pieces, kind of like Kyrie Elam was last year. He didn't get the full bore starting 12 games a year like Marco Wilson and CJ Henderson had to do when they come in. He was able to work in, and you saw all that progress kind of lead up to a great Orange Bowl. I think that, speaking of, especially like Jahari Rogers from what Todd Luganville brought up, that's kind of what I'm looking for in a lot of these freshmen, is come in and make an impact, but not having to make an impact.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is in college football today, true freshmen have to come in and they have to contribute. I mean, Florida has 10 early enrollees, have some guys who are mid-year enrollees as well. So they've got a lot of guys who will have had significant amounts of time with Nick Savage and will have had significant amounts of time in the meeting rooms to learn the offense, the defense, and contribute. And I think the reality is that you need guys from the freshman class to step in, and not just necessarily on offense or defense, but one of the things that we've talked about extensively is the idea that Freddie Swain never muffed a punt. Or you look back at the 2006 team that won the national championship, and one of the moments that kind of gets forgotten is the muff punt that was recovered against Arkansas by Wandy Pierre-Louis, right? And that's a guy who contributed to both the 06 and 08 championship teams. It's not somebody we necessarily look at and say, oh, that's somebody from that team that Florida couldn't have won without him. But really the reality is Florida couldn't have won without him because he made key plays in both seasons that helped contribute to the national championship. So, it's not necessarily that these guys are are coming straight out of the chute going to be stars. Now, you'd love if somebody like Dexter or somebody like Wingo or somebody like Rodgers is a star and just sort of locks down his position. You go, all right, we got that one taken care of for the next 3 years. Don't have to worry about it. But even if they just can come out and contribute on special teams and sort of allow guys like Trevon Grimes to not have to run down on punts and kickoffs, to allow guys like Kyrie Elam to not have to go out there and participate on those sorts of things. Just the depth and the quality of the players that Mullins brought into this class, I think, is going to improve things just because of the ability to focus on special teams. It's been a really long time since we've seen a bunch of block punts or block field goals from Florida teams. I think as Mullins starts to build up the talent base of the team, starts to get these guys competing on special teams exclusively, we may start to see that come back a little bit too.
Yeah, I know it gets a lot of heat too from all the the coaching staff and special teams coordinator and all that. Yeah, I mean, you know, Florida's got good field goal kickers. They're not dropping punts. They're not fumbling kickoffs and all that. So, I mean, I get it. And you know, Knox getting the hit on recruiting and all that stuff. But the special teams may not be – and look, the punt game has been awesome as well the last couple of years. So, I understand the Yanks there sometimes, but special teams have been pretty good there. So, as you said, maybe we will see some of these true freshmen making impacts there. So, one more aspect, Will, of these articles, and both mentioning that, you know, what Florida's losing at wide receiver. And, of course, that can't be overstated enough. We know that. And then these true freshmen coming in that can contribute. And, yes, the Gators lose a lot there, but it's also – there's also a bit coming back with Grimes, Tony, Copeland, Pitts, all those guys proven in some form or fashion. There would like to see more, of course, from Tony and Copeland coming up. Tony as more of a – just becoming more of a receiver, and Copeland just kind of maybe breaking through and being that receiver we expected him to be when he was recruited. Now he gets that chance to show that. You know, no shame in not getting more catches with – you have those guys that are contributing this week in the NFL Combine out there. You can't get in over those guys. You know, that's those guys are good, and there's a reason they're in Indianapolis at the Combine. So, look, you know, then we get to the wide receivers that redshirted last season, Will, and Deontay March, Demarcus West, and Trent Riddimore. The staff's high on that group, but you know, none of that group was ranked as high as the incoming freshman Xavier Henderson and Duquavion Frazier. So I think there's the question there is, how fast can Henderson and Frazier's come in and make a presence? They won't be here until the summer. We'll have to get adjusted to college life and college football. But, Will, you know, I look at it this way for these guys, especially on offense, if these guys are making an impact this season, you know, I don't think it would be at a disservice of the other wide receivers, but it would be because, you know, these guys are just that good. You know, the best thing will be for these players to have some kind of impact, because I think that means Florida, you know, Florida be really deep at receiver if these guys also come in and perform much like we've seen the last couple of years. And you know, not having, you know, the same guys make all the plays. If Frazier's and Henderson can come in and are contributors, then you're looking at depth at Florida receiver core that you've seen the last couple of years with Dan Mullen and spreading the ball around. You know, I don't know if those guys don't necessarily live up to the billing entry freshman. Do you see, you know, Grimes, Tony, Copeland, Pitts being the main targets all season long? Mainly spreading out the catches with those four guys. I think it'd be interesting to look at, but with these guys coming in late, I do think wide receiver is that position where a true freshman can come in and really make an impact. And I know everybody's heard the saying a lot, the further you are away from the ball, the easier it is to come and play. So, yeah, there is a lot of truth to that. But I do think the best thing is, you know, these guys come in and contribute and just create, as we just really kind of said, just create more depth. And really at this receiver position, it would just be a rehash of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that you look at is, and I think this is something that I've emphasized when I've talked about quarterbacks in the past, is do they find guys who are open? And one of the things that really was a change when Felipe Franks went out last year with an injury is the ball started getting spread around a lot more. So it's not necessarily that Franks was doing a bad job. It's just that he and Trask have different skills. And one of the things that Trask does better than Franks does is read the defense off, you know, pre-snap and figure out where to go with the ball. So what that means, if you got someone who's more physically gifted and runs the right route, Trask should be able to get him the ball and get him the ball in space. And when you look at how Florida's recruited, I mean, Whittemore's 6'3", 190. You look at Weston's 6'3", 205. Henderson is 6'3.5", 180. Jaquavion Frazier, 6'3.5", 194. And then the only guy who's relatively small is Deontay Marks, who's 5'11", 178. And so he's maybe a guy that you might see in the slot, you know, sort of the backup to Tony. And then you got Tony, he's a small guy, but then the other guys, you know, Trevon Grimes is not small. Jacob Copeland is not small. So I think it's really going to come down to who can block. I mean, that's one of the things in Mullen's offense is the wide receivers get playing time when they block. It's one of the reasons perhaps why Tony hasn't been out on the field as much as I would have liked or other people would have liked, is that if you're not effective blocking, then you're not going to get the playing time. And the wide receiver group last year was an unbelievable set of blocking wide receivers. Swain, Hammond, Grimes, Cleveland, those guys were all really, really good at blocking on the outside. I think that's where these guys are going to have to show their differentiation, because Florida is starting to get the level of skill on the field where one block springs a guy and he can take it to the house. And we saw that a couple of times last year with LaMichael Pirine, but that wasn't something we saw consistently from a couple of different players. And, you know, if they can get a guy like Lorenzo Lingard on the field, you know, Damian Pierce has shown an ability to take it to the house. And then Copeland has the skills to be able to do that. So, you know, I think the blocking is going to be something that these guys are going to earn their way onto the field. And that's maybe where the differentiator comes from the guys who came in the 2019 class over the 2020 class. Are they quite as talented? Maybe not, but they've got the size that Mullen likes. And again, if they're tenacious blockers, I think they're going to find their way onto the field, unless the freshmen come in and just dazzle with their skill set. And hey, if that's the problem, that's a good problem to have.
Well, one more part of this, and I don't really want to gloss over, but this is one more. This is Tom Luganville from ESPN. You know, in the way they titled their article, and the way the article was written, and the information in the article, you know, and one more that's calling for Florida to make a college football playoff push. And, you know, relating this freshman class, it may be, you know, helping along that way. So we're starting to see a whole lot of, I guess, list never really stopped, but starting to see out there, you know, Kyle Trask maybe being the number one ranked quarterback in the SEC. Another article here, as I say, with Luganville, called Florida and the college football playoff. The Saturday Down South recently released an article looking, because the dates for SEC Media Days were released last week, and they went ahead and put their – there's a lot of way too early stuff out there, so now there's a way too early picking of the SEC order of finish out there. And Saturday Down South, Connor O'Gara is picking Florida to win the SEC East. So, well, I mean, even with this top 10 2020 recruiting class, just another, you know, rung in the ladder of maybe Florida making a potential college football playoff push.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you can understand why people would pick them. They were 23rd in yards per pass last year on offense, but only 80th in yards per rush. And so if the offensive line can improve and just make the running game decent as opposed to poor, then the offense is going to jump in pretty close to the top 10. And then the defense last year was 22nd, I believe, in yards per play allowed. And so if the defense can stay similar, so let's say a top 25 defense and the offense can jump into the top 10, there were only four teams that did that last year. There was Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and UCF. And UCF didn't really play a huge, you know, not exactly a murderer's row. So three big boys, three teams that we all consider at least championship worthy. Obviously, Alabama lost to LSU along the way, but three of the teams that are championship worthy sort of fit that profile. So Florida's sitting there sort of, you know, 25th on offense, 25th on defense. If they can take a step into the top 10 in one or the other, then they're going to be right up there with one of the big guys. Now, obviously, they have to take that step up, but there's a reason why Florida's gone 11-2 last year. That was a very good team. I don't know that it was an elite team on either side of the ball. I think it was very good on both sides of the ball. The question is, does this recruiting class, or does the 2019 class, or do a couple of these transfers come in and convert the team in on one side of the ball or the other from very good to elite? There is the possibility to do that. And in fact, if they can get waivers for the guys who have transferred in, and then you've got Zach Evans sort of sitting on the background, who's got an official visit, I think, coming up at like March 20th. Yep. All of a sudden, they've gone from having one five-star last year to having five or six on the roster coming into this year, depending upon, again, how they you know, the waivers that they're able to get and whether they can get guys on the field. And there weren't a whole lot of teams last year that had more than five-star guys when you start looking at it. I think Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, USC, LSU, and Clemson are the only teams that had more than five-stars. So Florida's starting to get into that talent profile. If you believe that Mullen does more with less, I understand why you'd start thinking that Florida's just on the cusp. You know, we talked earlier, and I wrote an article maybe a month or two ago about 2020 really being the year that Florida has to make the run, because there's some turnover at Georgia. I don't necessarily think Jamie Newman's going to be the solution at quarterback. I don't think Carson Beck is going to be the solution at quarterback, especially not as a true freshman. And Florida's got a quarterback coming back who's proven that he can win games and play well on the road in the SEC and big bowl games and all that sort of stuff. So I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that Florida has the right players in the right position to take a step forward. Like I said, the biggest worry to me this offseason is that defensive line. That's the place where there's just a lot of question marks. And, you know, if your defensive line struggles, then your defense struggles. And if the defense takes a significant step back, it's not really going to matter what the offense does. Top 10 offense, top 50 defense, and you're Oklahoma. But unfortunately, being Oklahoma in the SEC means you're second in the East.
Yeah. We've seen it play out that way. But yeah, there you go. And that's why, you know, both those articles there really pinpointed the defensive line and made sure to point out the 2020 signees in that position group as, you know, a reason Florida can make a college football playoff push. So Gator fans, if you miss it over the weekend, a pretty cool thing the University of Florida is doing in a YouTube series there. So this is The Swamp, episode one, titled Earn It, was released on Saturday. So Will and I are just going to give a quick highlight of the newly released YouTube series on the Gators Football YouTube account. I don't really want to ruin a lot of it for you guys if you haven't watched it yet, but we'll discuss a bit of it here. You know, maybe it will push you to go watch a lot of good stuff there. You know, I'm in that kind of TV world, the bill-paying job, Will, as I like to call it. It's kind of a lot of the work I do there, you know, filming commercials, filming documentaries, filming, you know, footage, especially around college football or high school football season. We get to do a lot of that at a TV station. So the creative side of that piqued my interest as well. So it starts off with Nick Savage driving to the stadium at 4:30 in the morning, describing a typical morning routine this time of year in the offseason. You know, getting to the office, going over a workout plan with the strength and conditioning staff, and then, you know, taking all that into a 7 a.m. workout session. Trey Dean breaks the team in the huddle, and it's on from there. Well, man, this just it really enforces just how important a strength and conditioning program is and how important a strength and conditioning coach like Nick Savage is. He's around this team so much when Dan Mullen can't be. We saw and heard just how bad this program was under Jim McElwain, the strength and conditioning program. And look, it's been completely transformed under Nick Savage and Dan Mullen. And the first half of this special that Florida released really shows that.
Yeah, I mean, nobody on that team is going to Gainesville Health and Fitness or Planet Fitness to go lift extra weight after this is over. That's for sure. And the guys certainly look like it too when you see them on the YouTube video. It looks like those guys are getting the strength and conditioning that you would expect to get from a top 10 program. And you know, one of the things that Savage says early on in the documentary is, you know, you don't just go hard; you go hard right. I think is the quote that he did, and I love it. Right, that they're going to make sure these guys are doing things the right way. They're going to make sure that they're doing the right reps, but that the reps have a purpose and that every rep matters. And even to that effect, they have a segment where they bring in people to teach the players about life skills. Yep. And, you know, one of the things that was a criticism under McElwain was the credit card scandal and the frying pan. And I think the frying pan was after McElwain left, but certainly was with guys he'd brought in. And, you know, you get this sort of instance. We haven't had a whole lot of that with the guys that Mullen's brought in. I mean, we had a few dismissals and some things that have gone on, but, you know, you do feel like there's been a little bit more focus within the program over the last year or so. And I suspect that this has something to do with it. And the closeness and the accountability that the strength and conditioning program brings is a big part of that.
Yeah. Well, what you were referencing to was after the workout session, it transitioned to this Gator Life segment, and that's headed up by former Gator Vernell Brown, who's on the staff doing this. And Brown brings in speaker C.L. Shepard to talk to the team. And a couple points there I really like from Kyrie Campbell and Marco Wilson. Kyrie Campbell, he really just speaks about being a leader. And look, Florida lost a defensive leader last year in David Reese. They're going to be looking for somebody to kind of take up that mantle coming this kind of year. And Kyrie Campbell, even before this, was somebody I was really pinpointing as maybe being that guy. And there he is on this documentary talking about the importance of being a leader and all that. Look, I know some of this is lip service. Of course, every program's kind of going through this. A lot of guys are going to be saying the same thing. But I think we've seen enough from where this program has taken shape, as you said, Will, going from the credit card scandal, going from a workout program that was really a disservice to the university and the players before. It's not so much lip service in Florida when you've seen where they've come from. That's kind of how I put it there. But also Marco Wilson's there saying, you know, how they relate to this motivational speaker. Be comfortable with the uncomfortable and make playing football the least stressful aspect of life. You know, that's really what it should be. These guys are in college. You know, football should be easy for them. The work you put in should be hard, but once you get on Saturdays in the fall, that's when you should be able to reap the rewards. But you know, as long as you're doing everything right along the way.
Yeah, well, hopefully one of the guys who comes in and talks about life skills teaches them to stay off of Twitter during the season, because that's how you keep yourself stress-free if you're playing football at a major university, is just stay away from that during presidential debates and the football season, and you'll be just fine. But
yeah, they don't need to see what I'm saying on Twitter, by any
means. Well, you're usually pretty kind unless, you know, people are stealing info. But other than that, you know, it's really just sort of it's nice to see that the program is putting an emphasis on making sure that these guys have life skills. You know, one thing, I'm sure that it said part one in the YouTube clip, so I'm sure that there's going to be more of these coming. It'll be interesting to see whether it's sort of giving us a day-to-day look or whether they're giving us a new look at the different kinds of things that they're doing. Because to me, the life skills part of it is something that's really interesting to me, understanding exactly what they're teaching the players. I know maybe under Will Muschamp, they had people come in and were talking about relationships, domestic violence, sexual violence, those sorts of things, keeping yourself in the right situations and understanding, you know, the nuances that go on within relationships. And you know, I think that stopped under Jim McElwain, and I'm interested to know whether that's been reinvigorated under Brown heading up the program and really trying to bring these guys life skills, not necessarily just football skills.
And one more aspect, Will, before, you know, I really liked about this, and when they were wrapping up, they have a leadership committee, and the players vote on and draft their workout team. You know, workouts are a competition. Look, this was something Urban Meyer kind of did. You know, the losers go eat hot dogs and all that kind of stuff, and the winners go eat steak and all that. You know, you draft a team there, so everybody's kind of relied on each other. You know, don't, and so some of the quotes here, don't fold in these drills or fold in the game, as these guys are, you know, tug of war with each other. Tug of war. We've seen the videos of that drill time and time again, but you know, don't let go of the rope. And that's kind of just a moniker that they take with them throughout the season. When the times get tough on the field, you know, don't let go of that rope. So, you know, that kind of transition is to mat drills and what Kyrie Campbell describes as a mental breakdown. That's what they're trying to do to you with those drills. But then one thing that, you know, Dan Mullen said that caught my ear here was, the harder it gets, the harder I go. Good there. But, you know, it was good to see that the coaching staff is around the team as well at 5 a.m. in the morning. It's not just Nick Savage, not just the strength and conditioning coach and the players. It's the whole coaching staff. It's Dan Mullen, it's Todd Grantham, it's Greg Knox, it's Billy Gonzalez. They're all out there, you know, taking part in doing this. And just to end it, Will, that one of the last quotes Dan Mullen had, you know, it's not easy to be great.
Yeah, man. I mean, I love the competition. I love the fact that they were dividing people up and pitting them against each other to see who would come out ahead in those strength and conditioning drills. You know, the one thing that jumped to mind was, I wonder who's got the punter. And I started thinking, you know, Tommy Townsend's a little bit of a renegade. He might have been a dark horse to help a team. I wonder whether Jeremy Crawshaw is stepping into to his shoes and is just as wild, especially, you know. So some of those Australian guys have some interesting backgrounds. So, there's some skill in figuring out, do you get the kicker? Do you get the punter? You know, do you get the freshman? Do you find the grizzled old veteran who's done this for 4 years now? I'd be really interested in understanding how they pick those teams, the dynamics, and I'm imagining there's some trash talk going on when one of those teams wins the competition.
Yeah. To end it, Will, I think Brett Hagee said it best here. He goes, they're going to focus on the little things to get more than 10 wins and get more than 11 wins. And that's where this program's at right now. You know, thankfully that's where this program's at right now. We get to see this, we get to see the aspects of this in the team, and we get to see, you know, what these are little things to the fan side of things, but I think we know the importance that it plays once this team takes the field on Saturdays in the fall. But this is one of those little things. Everybody looks forward to game day. Everybody looks forward to fall camp and leading up to every Saturday. But this is the little things that will add up. If Florida's going to make that college football playoff push that we just talked about here, you know, it's going to be what they're putting in through January leading up to spring practice and then leading into fall camp. So it's that little thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the stuff that not everybody's willing to do, right? And yeah. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, when we watched the Georgia game and even the LSU game, I think we knew it would be an upset if Florida pulled it out this past year. Against LSU, it really felt like they could, especially when it was tied, I think, at 28, or when LSU was up 35-28 and trashed the interception in the end zone. You know, you felt like Florida might be able to pull it off against Georgia. Even though it was only a 7-point spread, it really felt a little bit wider than that in that particular game. And so I don't think that's going to be the feeling in 2020. I think these guys are sort of preparing for, they may not be able to beat LSU and Georgia this year, at least not both of them, but I don't think it's going to be an upset if they do. And I think last year it was an upset. This year, I don't think it will be. And so that means that the program's making progress. And especially when you factor in the softness of the schedule in 2020. There's only going to be two teams they got to beat. They're going to have two games that are circled on the calendar in terms of the ones they got to show up for and the ones they got to go after. And hopefully the strength and conditioning program has the Georgia and LSU games just sort of running on a loop there in the weight room to remind these guys why they're putting in all the hard work.
Yep, realism. Like you said, just how close they were last year and translating it to the 2020 season. So that was This Is the Swamp, episode one on Earn It is the title there on YouTube. So we're going to wrap it up. You kind of teased a little bit what we're going to wrap up. Just a quick recruiting update before we sign off here on this episode of Gators Breakdown. 2021 four-star tight end Gage Wilcox will commit. Make his commitment on Friday. 6'4", 228 pounds, says he will be revealing his commitment on Friday, February 28th, 6 p.m. He says he will make his announcement through social media between Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. So the Gators battling the nation's elite here for Gage Wilcox. Florida looks to be in really, really good shape here, especially with Tim Brewster as tight ends coach and leading the charge. Florida has long thought to be the choice here before Brewster, but now, hopefully that, pretty much seals the deal. Wait till Friday. We'll let it play out till then. The 249th ranked player in the country, the number 11 tight end in the country from Tampa, mentions he loves the way Florida used the tight end position last year with Kyle Pitts. Could see himself in that mold, moving the tight end around, flexing out to catch passes in space, going up to get jump balls, something that really intrigues him, Will.
Yeah, well, I think anybody who watches how Florida uses Kyle Pitts would say, "Oh, that sounds great." I
mean, yeah, that should not be a hard sell.
the difference is that Kyle Pitts is a freak athlete, and certainly this kid is good, but he's gonna have to prove himself to be as good as Kyle Pitts has been. But Florida's brought in Brewster. He's obviously brought an awful lot of energy to the program, not just at the tight end position, but you understand why he's considered a good recruiter when you listen to him talk. You understand why, that Stadium McGale interview that he did, from everything I've heard, he was just really engaging there. So, I think the reality is that Florida's going to have their pick of tight ends, and hopefully this is the start of it, because you get a guy like Brewster in there who can really sell the program, not just for tight ends, but all over the field. But especially you figure at that position, Florida's going to be successful, and we'll see if it's the case with Wilcox.
Yep, so Gator fans, be on social media, 6 p.m. Friday, looking out for Wilcox's commitment there, as I said, between Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. So it would really be a feather in Mullen and Brewster's cap there, being able to pull one from those SEC rivals. Will, story that won't end until he's on campus somewhere. Zach Evans, as you mentioned earlier, visiting the weekend of March 20th. Gators in great shape here as well for the nation's top running back. This is going back to the 2020 class we talked earlier about. This didn't even factor in a player like Zach Evans. So you add a five-star to what Tom Luganville and Barton Simmons was talking about and Florida making that push. Well, this would be one more piece, I think, getting Florida closer there. Crazy recruitment so far. I'm not sure there's many twists and turns left here, but remember he signed a letter of intent to Georgia, so he can't sign another. He will just enroll at his school of choice in May. I think what to look out for here, Will, is if he takes that March 20th visit, does he commit soon after that? Now he may commit, and if he does, look, we still have to look until he enrolls at his school of choice in May. He'll have to sign financial aid papers and be in class in May for the summer classes. So, look, March 20th, he can visit that weekend. That Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after, he could come out with some kind of announcement that he's going to commit to Florida. But we still have to, you know, it'd still be worth watching either way until he is enrolled in classes in May, given the history of this recruitment. But like I said, I don't see many twists and turns left in this one.
Yeah, well, this is another one where when Mr. Brewster got hired and brought in, things started to seem to trend Florida's way, which obviously is one of the reasons why Dan Mullen went out and got him when he had the opportunity to replace his tight ends coach. Certainly somebody who was an elite recruiter was one of the things that he was looking for, and it looks like from the early returns that that's what they're getting. But, you know, the reality is that Florida needs to add difference makers on offense. They need guys who, you know, Xavier Henderson is part of that. Bringing in a guy like Copeland a couple of years ago is part of that. Making sure you free up Tony is part of that. But, you know, if you get an opportunity to bring in a top 15 running back, you know, that's obviously somebody you want to add. That's somebody who is a high quality player in terms of their ability to take the ball to the house. And Florida's offense, it's been a while since Florida's had a guy who every time he touched the ball was electric. And I'm not saying Evans is going to be that in college, but what I'm saying is that typically guys who rank in this area of the 24/7 recruiting rankings tend to be players who have an opportunity to be that kind of player. And so the more of those guys you line up, the better chance you have that you get somebody who's truly special. So guys like Percy Harvin, Peter Warwick, you know, those guys tend to be in this sort of five-star mold, and Evans is one of those, and he's a chance that, you know, that's a chance that Florida can find a true difference maker on offense. So it's great that he's considering the Gators, and obviously we'll see what happens from here.
All right, continue 2020 before we go. Of course, Gators lost a commit last week. Mark Britt committed to Ole Miss last week. No big surprise there. Waiting on test scores. He wanted to go ahead and commit. Florida wanted him to wait till April. And, you know, Ole Miss gets Mark Britt there from the state of Florida. And so, you know, we'll see. Wait and see. Also, Leonard Manuel, that's one's still going to wait. We'll still have to wait till April on that one. Hopefully everything comes back A-OK and Leonard Manuel ends up in this Gators class. But Ole Miss might be the one to watch out there for Manuel as well, if the, you know, the proper test scores don't come back there, Will. So took a hit last week. It didn't really drop Florida in the recruiting rankings at all, losing Britt to Ole Miss. But if you can add Evans, I don't think it jumps Florida much either. I think they would still stay at eighth, but still getting a big-time playmaker. But losing Britt, have to watch out for Manuel, and hopefully Evans is in the fold.
Yeah, I think Evans will actually jump into seven. I think they will jump over if they bring Evans in. I don't think losing Britt or Manuel moves them too much. The reality is once you get to 23, 24 guys, the only guys who make an impact in terms of being able to jump up and down are typically top 100 recruits, which is why Avante Williams was somebody that we wanted at National Signing Day, because he would have made a difference and pushed him up over Auburn there too. But, you know, I try not to get too caught up in one particular recruit. I think the evidence shows that guys who are five-star guys are guys who end up in the NFL a whole lot more often. I mean, top 15 guys, I look back, I think it was like 2014, 2015, or maybe it was 2012 and 2013. I can't remember the years, but look back at the five-star recruits and they were drafted like 80% of the time. And then you went from like 15 to 30 and those guys were drafted like 40%. And then it was basically 20%, you know, somewhere between 20% and 30% all the way out to 300. So that's really where the development starts to take place. And that's where Mullen has excelled, both in the last couple of years at Florida, but in his time at Mississippi State as well. But if you can bring in some of those high level guys, it's less to me than about the overall recruiting ranking. I still think the overall ranking is important, but the high level guys that you bring in make a huge difference in terms of the success of your class. And, you know, if you've got 6 5-star guys and 4 of them turn out, you're gonna have 4 really good players. If you've got 1 5-star guy, then obviously you have to have the one guy be a real monster in order to make hay from that particular segment of your recruiting class. So yeah, I mean, I think Evans is a big deal, but I don't think it's a deal break. I don't think it's a huge black mark on the program if he doesn't come. And the same thing with Britt and Manuel. I think those are quality players that you'd love to have for depth and for special teams, and potentially one of them might turn into a star, because, you know, oftentimes 3 and 4-star guys, low 4-star guys and 3-star guys do turn into stars, but I don't know that you can count on that. And so it's not something where I'm stressing out.
All right. Well, what you got recently released, still looking back at Gators football, but on Read Reaction. So what's that been like, and what's coming up on Read Reaction?
Yeah. So Nick Knudsen, one of our writers, has been looking back at the 1979 season. So the depressing part of the Charlie Pell era is now over. So he's going to be breaking into more of the success that Pell had in the next couple of weeks and bringing out those. And then, you mentioned your real job. My real job has also been getting in the way a little bit. And during the off season, it's a little bit less stressful, so I don't necessarily put something out every week. But I'm working on some stuff that's going to be looking at Trask versus Emory, and then I've also got something in the works where I'm looking at different aspects of recruiting and sort of how that correlates to coaches' success and how you can rank coaches. So those will be coming up in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully people enjoy that.
All right, coming up here on Gators Breakdown, Will and I discussed it. So the next couple of weeks, we'll start kind of our spring preview. So on this Gators Breakdown episode, I will release late Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, sometime on Wednesday. On Twitter, I will put out there. We're gonna do it different this year. We do a Q&A style. So next week, podcast, we'll do Q&A spring offense. We'll just talk. We'll get your questions of guys, what you want to know about the offense. Get our thoughts on that. And then the next week, we'll do the defense. So no recruiting. Basically just straight spring football preview, straight football talk. For the next couple of weeks, we want to get your questions. So, like I said, on Wednesday, I'll put it out there. You'll send questions. If you're watching on YouTube, if you want to put them in the comment section, I'll try and whip back around and catch some of the questions there. I know I have a couple saved from a listener who sent to us a couple weeks ago. Kind of gave me the thought that we would do spring preview a little different there, and trying to get our listeners' thoughts and questions. Will, I think it should be a fun way to break down and preview spring coming up.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things you've always prided on, I think, is one of the things we really want to be is somebody who's interacting with the audience, and this gives an opportunity to do that. So certainly send your questions in and, ask us some difficult questions. We'll try to back it up with some statistics, but throw a little bit of opinion in there, have a little bit of fun. And the good news is that that we're wrong about 50% of the time. So whenever we're critical, just assume that's when we'll be wrong.
Yeah, it's one reason I wanted to get the questions out a little early, because everybody knows how Will and I like to look up some numbers, some metrics if we can. So if we get some of the questions early enough, we will research as much as we can going into the episodes in the next couple of weeks. So send them to Will or myself. You can send them to Will at Will Miles SEC or my Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. But as I said, I'll share the post on Twitter as well. Will, anything else, man?
Nah, man, just appreciate everybody supporting us, appreciate the feedback, and look forward to answering questions over the next couple of weeks.
All right, that's Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site readandreaction.com. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.